Here he is with 9 stone 12, 136 pounds as a four-year-old in the Melbourne Cup of 1930. 10,000 pounds sterling that race was worth, and the best stayers in Australia were engaged, but Firelap simply played with them. Aye, it's like he's taking candy from a baby. Firelap wins.
He's a phenomenal galloper. I think the best horse I've ever seen and ever rode.
The Red Terror, the greatest horse in the world.
In 1930, Firelap won 11 races in 11 weeks. Nothing compares with that.
We're going to lose you, and we're going to miss you. Good luck, Firelap. Australia's with you.
Going to America, Firelap was sent into the most treacherous racing environment that has ever existed.
But Firelap's got it. Come on, Firelap. Firelap, you beauty.
And then, at the height of his racing career, Firelap suddenly dies.
The Yanks killed him.
I rang Dad and said, oh, I'm going to Canberra. I said, I'll have a look at Firelap's heart while I'm there. And that's when he said, well, that'll be clever because it's not Firelap's heart, it's draft horses. Well, I just said to him, are you joking?
All the evidence is right there in front of us, in plain sight. I'm Kerry Negara, and this is Killing Firelap, a forensic investigation. Episode 2, Inside Information. I'm reminded of the quote by the 20th century philosopher Walter Benjamin, to hide something means to leave traces, and traces there are in abundance. Many, it seems, is an expert and has a true story that solves the riddle of Firelap's death, where interestingly the accusing finger is often pointed firmly in Tommy Woodcock's direction. I, on the other hand, grew up with the story of how Firelap died and by whose hand, directly from Tommy Woodcock himself, as told to my parents, Thelma and Cliff. It is not a classic flawed Tommy told me story, but rather a true story that comes from an enduring lifetime of friendship forged between my parents, Cliff and Thelma Hinchliffe, my grandfather, Ray Hinchliffe, Tommy Woodcock and his wife, Emma. What I didn't know were the actual reasons, other than speculation and rumours, why Firelap was killed and the intense planning behind the scenes that went on to pull off the killing. Although he had his suspicions, Tommy Woodcock did not conclusively know either. He was a devoted innocent who lived for looking after his horse with absolute love and dedication. So I decided to go on my own journey of putting together the information I had with the information I was yet to find. I believed with the benefit of a thorough forensic investigation, I could finally pick up the missing pieces. I think it's important that you know I grew up being aware of Tommy Woodcock as a man totally committed to his small stable of racehorses. He had few friends outside of the owners he trained for. As a couple, he and Emma were quite reclusive. I didn't realise at the time that our family were perhaps their closest friends. Tommy trained two remarkable Better Boy horses for my grandfather, Ray Hinchliffe, Elect and Chosen Lady, winning the Oaks and the Manifold Stakes amongst other major races in the 1960s. Tommy and Emma were known to us simply as the Woodies, that is, Mr. and Mrs. Woody to us children. From when we moved from the country to Melbourne as 5 and 7-year-olds, my brother Wayne and I grew up going down to the Woodies stables in Mentone almost every weekend and often on Friday nights to their home for dinner. We were allowed to help feed up the horses, muck out the stables, and play with the litters of kittens, which were allowed to breed freely to keep the mice down. And sometimes there was a foal that we could cuddle and get close to. I was born an animal lover, and for me this was heaven. Sometimes on Saturday race days, our parents would leave us in the care of Mrs. Woody, Emma Woodcock, who took us 10-pin bowling and let us play her old 78 records that had games like Pick a Winner. My brother Wayne and I would play this particular record over and over. The race caller called a race on the crackly old record, and the winner was different every time. Yet to me as a child, Emma could be quite a ferocious character. She was a slight, small woman who had a sparky temperament similar to her cute Chihuahua dogs that were timid in her arms but yappy and scary on the ground. Emma, like Tommy, also had a demanding routine. They had up to 5 apprentice jockeys at any given time, living in quarters behind the main house, and Emma cooked and cleaned and washed for them. It was a strict regime, and of course as a child I had no idea of the pressures they were under. The Woodcock stables appeared folksy and laid back, without the trappings of modern renovation and scientific method, but there was nothing casual about the stables. Tommy and Emma ran a tight ship, with the boys at home and at the stables. They all called Tommy boss and were very respectful. Sadly, one afternoon around the late 1960s, Emma was badly bashed and beaten in a brutal home robbery when Tommy was at the races. When my mum and dad hurried to the hospital to see Emma, they did not recognise her punched up, broken, disfigured face.
In the morning, the Yarra Glen Cup, a friend of mine, about 6 o'clock in the morning, when I was down at Morty Alec, he came rushing down to the stable. He said, "Your house has been robbed." And he said, "Your wife's been bashed up." He said, "She's in a terrible mess." He said, "I rushed straight home." It was a terrible thing to walk into the room and see her. Blood everywhere, on the floor. They pulled everything out of the drawer. Beautiful photographs of me horses and Farlap and all of me good horses. And they trampled all over them in the blood. And they made a terrible mess of her. The poor soul, she was bashed all across the face. She had all her face smashed in. She had a broken hip and broken ribs, broke her arm. And yarn, she was 9 weeks in the hospital. You know, that finished her life. She had a bit of age on her, because that was the end of her. She was never, never the same after.
It was a truly shocking crime. To do this to a small, defenceless woman for a few lousy dollars dumbfounded and disgusted all of us. Emma was never the same after this and became even more reclusive. Recently, when I look back at photos of Tommy and Emma together in America after Farlap had died, I could see how radiantly pretty and stylish Emma was. No wonder Tommy fell head over heels in love with her from first sight. There were times when the adults would sit around after dinner, yarning and telling stories. The story of Farlap was a heart-wrenching story for young children to hear, knowing that the great champion died in such shocking pain, with Mr. Woody coping alone and no one there to alleviate the pain of either his horse or himself. And that wasn't the only painful animal story we heard. I'll never forget Mr. Woody telling us after tea one night about horses being left locked up in their stables for weeks on end with no feed or water. As a child, I worried about those horses for a long time. A fateful meeting. My father, Cliff, had met Tommy as a naive 16-year-old country boy who was new to the city studying a cadetship at RMIT, a tech college in Melbourne. With a family friend, he visited Tommy's stables every weekend, and together the older man and the youngster, who had also grown up with horses, became lifelong friends. Later, my father introduced his father, my grandfather, Ray Hinchliffe, to Tommy. Ray was a colourful raconteur, auctioneer and stock and station agent. Together they forged a great racing partnership, with Tommy Woodcock training the Hinchliffe racehorses. I guess my whole family, from my grandfather down, had a distrust of the media. Except me. I was happily a child of television. So even when Mr. Woody became renowned again with his champion horse Reckless in the late 70s and the Farlap movie being produced in 1983, my family, although always at his side, stayed well out of the spotlight. My family was definitely not on the media radar in any way. Theirs was a private relationship that only a few insiders like TV sports reporter Neil Kearney knew the depth of. Neil made a tribute film to Tommy Woodcock in 1992 that he simply titled Tommy. The Hinchliffes liked Neil and gave him access to interviews, to their property, and the family films shot and edited by my grandfather Ray Hinchliffe in the 1960s. Neil's film shows just how close the Hinchliffes and the Woodcocks were. Just as well that my grandfather Ray was a home movie amateur who loved filming his life with us, the woodcocks, his racehorses, his grandchildren, hunting dogs, camping trips, and his incredible shack that he and my dad built on the Cow Swamp Wildlife Sanctuary in northern Victoria. I managed to preserve enough of his movies over 30 years ago to have a good record of those heady days. The Hinchliffes and the Woodcocks had a friendship that went beyond racing. On the rare occasions that Tommy left his stables, he could be found up on the Murray River, camping out with my dad Cliff, and at times with my grandfather Ray and his aviator friend Reg Ansett, fishing or game shooting. Sometimes Reg would fly them and a group of male friends on his Ansett ANA helicopter to exotic places like King Island off the east coast. My dad shot his first pheasant there that he proudly had stuffed and propped up on our fridge in Bulleen. The unfortunate pheasant was as familiar in our house as the kitchen teapot.
Met the regular life shooting. First time I met him, up at Mr. Hinchcliffe. He had a whole shack up there and we went shooting. I've been shooting on the lake before with Mr. Hinchy. And here we start the little motor up and away we go around this lake and where all the ducks used to plant in these lagoons round the back. I used to lift this little engine out of the water and she used to roar and the ducks would fly out and the waves were going. And Mr. Hinchy was a pretty good shot. He got used to the boy boat rocking and by God, he was bringing them down. We lost a few, couldn't get them in the rough water. Anyhow, we went around and got a good few out of that. Sir Edil didn't get many ducks. I think the old four of them only got about three ducks or something. Those ducks were worth it, I can tell you.
Back in the early 1980s, I introduced my brother Wayne to storyteller and musician Jan Wozitski. Wayne was a fan of Jan's Bushwhackers band. Wayne kept in touch with Jan, and although Tommy was initially reluctant, he agreed to Jan recording his life story during his last months propped up in the lounge room of my family's country property near the Murray River town of Yarrawonga. And just as well Tommy did take part, because his voice, in his own words, his recollections, dare I say straight from the horse's mouth, are a wonderful historical record for us all to share in. Tommy's bright mind was sharp and clear to the day he passed away. When Emma was no longer able to, my mother Thelma, or Thelly as most people called her, kept all of the Woodcocks' account books for them. She organised the stable bills, receipts, paid the cheques, and made sure the tax returns were filed. Tommy was forever grateful to my mother, who enjoyed helping wherever she could. Mum and Dad continued going to the Woodcocks every Thursday night, where Tommy would rustle up home-cooked dinners and together they would watch their favourite TV show, Power Without Glory, the story of John Wren, Melbourne's infamous businessman and underworld racing identity, whose fortune was made on the back of illegal betting shops and who Tommy had known only too well from around the racing traps. As Tommy said, when you put your horse on a track, they're public property. And if the owners like to have a bet on them, well, good on them. Your horse is 100% trying, and that's all that matters. But in reality, and somewhat naively, Tommy said he preferred training for non-betting people who are only in it for the horse, for the fun and the pleasure of racing. As my dad Cliff said, Tommy and Emma weren't socialites in any way. They rarely went out. They had some close friends, and he's proud to say that he and my mother and our family were a big part of that. Right up until the time Tommy died, they grew closer as every year went by.
We spent a lot of time with Mr. and Mrs. Woodcock, and I think one of the reasons why they enjoyed our family was, unfortunately, Tommy and Emma never ever had a family, and we really become part of a family to them. It just grew and grew and grew, and we were just one big happy lot of people.
When Mr. Woody became sick in 1983, my parents temporarily moved in with him at his Mentone home. My mother had nursed Emma until she died the previous year. But Mr. Woody was becoming frail. He wanted his lung cancer diagnosis to be private. And one weekend, Mum and Dad, for a change of scenery, took him up to their Yarrawonga country property where my brother Wayne was making a new life on the land. Tommy decided he would like to stay with Wayne and his partner Robin and see his time out, as he said, in the quiet of the country.
Cliffy and Thelma Inchcliffe, oh, they were very good to me too. Truly, I think for only them two people. You know, honestly speaking, I don't think I'd have been here today. And of course, they knew that I didn't have much hope of working again, so they said, all right, we'll take you home. We'll take you home and see how you go for a day or two. So they took me home and I was home for a couple of days. And I realised then that I was finished. I could never work again. So I just said to Cliffy and Thelly, I said, I'm finished. And they said, well, we'll stop here with you for a little while longer. I said, oh, thank them very much. And they were busy, they had their business. And then they suggested, would you like to go up the farm to Wayne? That's their son. And I said, oh, that seemed a very nice thing. So anyhow, they packed me up here. And when I left the hospital, yeah, and I was 39 kilos. And now I was up here for a month or two, and I got up to 47 kilos. So, you know, it's a great thing to think you can get that high. I get around all right. I can walk around on my frame and I'm happy up here, so I'm very, very thankful for them.
It was here in our family lounge room at the Yarrawonga farm that Tommy allowed final interviews with racing journalist Clem Dimsey and with storyteller Jan Wozitski. Perhaps knowing he was nearing the end, Tommy hinted very directly at poisoning by Farlap's vet Bill Nielsen, who he said it would seem had accidentally mixed up the wrong medicine on the morning of Farlap's death. This was Tommy's understated way of saying that he believed Bill Nielsen was definitely implicated.
So anyway, he went up and got some medicine. In them days, they used to give him medicine, they used to put them in big capsules. Anyway, he put the medicine big capsules and he put it down his throat.
So did the horse doctor come vet Bill Nielsen kill Farlap with wrong medicine? Or is Tommy Woodcock jumping to a terribly wrong conclusion? I'm Kerry Nagara and this is Killing Farlap, a forensic investigation. Technical producer is Richard Di Gregorio.
Hi, Richard here. We'll be putting up two episodes every week of Kerry's amazing investigation, Killing Farlap. There are 9 episodes in all, so make sure you subscribe and the episodes will automatically come into your podcast library. We welcome any feedback and comments and hope if you enjoy the podcast, you will give us a star rating and review. Thanks for listening.